The start of the F1 2022 season is right around the corner, with pre-season testing just days away, and as such, even more teams have now revealed their liveries and designs for their entries to the year. Welcome to episode 167 of the F1 Grid Talk podcast. Today we're here to discuss the newly revealed cars, or liveries in some cases, of the AlphaTauri, Williams, Ferrari and Mercedes cars for the 2022 F1 season. My name is Ruby Price, and joining me today we have journalist Louis Edwards.
Hello.
Master of Engineering Jack Watson.
Hello.
And Steve Jackson from Formula Shakedown.
Good morning.
We promise he's there. First, if you enjoy this podcast, we'd love it if you could take 5 to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll shout out all of you who do to say thanks. You can also now leave 5-star reviews on Spotify. So if that has been enabled on the device that you're listening to it, give us a 5-star review on Spotify. So before we look at the cars, I just want to garner a bit of reaction from the guys regarding the news that after the inquiry into the events that took place in the last few laps of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, it has been revealed that Michael Massey will no longer continue to be the race director going forward. Instead, the position will be held by Eduardo Freitas and Niels Wittich. Louis, what do you make of this? Was relieving Massey the right decision?
I mean, we've had it nonstop really since the season ended in Abu Dhabi in December. And I think the FIA were coming under some serious scrutiny, as was right. And eventually they had to do something. I think this is something that couldn't have just been sort of washed into the carpet, because it's been very clear from the fans that this is something that needed to be changed. And not only the fans, the teams were also calling for change. So it made the most logical sense. And of course, Michael Massey, regardless of even that race in Abu Dhabi, wasn't having a particularly brilliant year anyway as FIA director. He was making horrendous errors, you know, throughout the season. So I think it was the right decision. And there's been quite a lot of changes announced, which I think is the right thing to do. At least the FIA are acknowledging what happened. Of course, this isn't going to affect the outcome of the championship, no matter how many people still want that to happen. It's not going to happen, but at least the FIA have recognised the issue and have made a very clear intention that this will never happen again.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack, it's been announced that the FIA will also be introducing a series of new structures, including, for example, a standalone race control unit to function similarly to VAR in football. Do you agree a virtual body is what's needed in F1 to provide assistance to the race director?
I think it's a necessary requirement, given they plan to rotate. We've seen it before with stewards, which operate under a similar system. People are only human. You're always going to get a difference of opinion, but a rule book needs to be applied in a very exacting way. If there is a point where a human would look at a infringement and be on the limit about it, of the two very qualified replacement RDs we have in place, they could go either way. So for those marginal cases, I think it's a very good thing to include. Also, you got to bear in mind the amount of data that one man essentially was being flung, you would expect a computer to deal with. So I'm just kind of surprised it's not being included sooner in a way. But I mean, if F1 is nothing, if not archaic. So yeah, I think it's a good decision. Inevitably, we will get frustrated with its outcomes, as people do with VAR. But I mean, I think it's a necessary evil, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I remember like in the few years before VAR was introduced, every single football fan was saying, this is why we need video assistant referees and stuff like they've got in the rugby. And then literally half a year later, like they're like, VAR needs to go. It's unacceptable. Yeah, finally, Steve got Eduardo Freitas and the World Endurance Championships race director for 20 years, and Niels Wittich, the former DTM race director, coming in to replace Massey. Obviously, we've yet to see how things will go, but you know, is there anything that you know we can expect from them?
Yeah, Eduardo Freitas's reputation precedes him. He is a very no-nonsense individual. He has been sort of party to a couple of odd decisions. So one of those being the I think it's the final round of WEC last year between Porsche and Ferrari and GTE. If you're an endurance racing fan, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But I think they're probably, both Freitas and Wittich are both probably the most qualified people for the job. Something that I've had to bear in mind, because obviously Abu Dhabi was a very polarizing sort of event, was that Michael Massey was put into that role in fairly sort of sudden and quite sad circumstances. And I think he genuinely did his very best. And obviously it's come back to bite him, just one too many high profile mistakes. I wouldn't expect that from Freitas or Wittich, considering their resume. However, Formula One is quite a brutal sport. I think the one advantage they do have is that teams can no longer lobby directly to race control, or to the race director, I should say. So there is a now a structure in place for teams to contact the race director, and it's not Toto Wolff or Christian Horner or Jonathan Wheatley or anybody breathing down their necks. So I think they've definitely got their work cut out for them. There is reputational damage that they need to take into consideration as well. So I think the first few races of the year, like anything for 2022, will show just how they fit in. But I think having a rotation of two different race directors is a good idea, just to sort of, you know, hopefully alleviate any concerns of bias or anything like that. So yeah, looking forward to how they do. Freitas especially has an incredible reputation. He's very respected in everything he does. So I think he'll command that in the paddock especially.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to touch on the lack of, well, the new procedures, let's say, to contact the race director mid-race, you know, I will certainly be grateful not to be hearing, you know, Red Bull and Mercedes just constantly going off to, you know, Michael Massey, mostly because Michael Massey won't be there, but also because, you know, the new procedures. It just got so grating towards the end of the season. But yeah, that is the news, basically. So let's get on to the cars. And Louis, let's start with AlphaTauri's AT03. Just visually at the minute, you know, it's a very similar color scheme to last year's AlphaTauri, you know, the majority of blue with the white accents and stuff. First impressions, what do you think?
I think it's an absolutely beautiful looking car. It's one of the few liveries that I think have really worked with the shape of the car to just make it look as good. Some of the cars have just, it seems to me, they've just slapped a livery on whatever shape that was going to come out of it. But AlphaTauri, no, it is a striking looking car. Yeah, they kind of just flip the colours a bit, which they kind of then did last year. But I think the AlphaTauri livery in general has been really nice ever since it came in 2020. So, there's not really much I could say sort of more about the livery. It's a livery that I think we're going to expect to see just very few changes to over the next however many years they're in Formula One. But yeah, I definitely can't go wrong with it. It's a beautiful car.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jack, coming to you, you know, for some engineering insight, it's going to happen quite a bit today, but is there anything that, like, you've noticed with this car that, you know, obviously other teams are going to be trying to maybe copy, or along the other lines of, you know, will have gone a completely different direction because they've got their own philosophies?
Not particularly, because to my eyes, it looks like it's the model still. So it's a bit hard to judge, because everyone would be working off of the same basis, only on the front end. I think the rear maybe has a little bit of a unique look. Something, they're all being very coy about their diffuser design, but certainly how that integrates with the rear suspension is something we might be able to use to get a bit of a look at the Red Bull, because obviously Red Bull very much did just use the standard design and only reveal a livery. So yeah, not much. I mean, to be honest, Red Bull still being under that Red Bull umbrella, they're going to share a lot of parts, and Red Bull are going to enforce a lot of secrecy in that side of things. So I wouldn't expect a lot of what we see here to be carried over into testing. Packaging wise, which has been a big talking point, it looks fairly conventional. There's no real sort of draw to it, it seems. We haven't seen a repeat of the trick Aston Martin sidepods either. I'm surprised I haven't seen Red Bull try that. Well, they may have done. It might be something we see later on. We'll have to wait. But a fairly conservative design, I'd say.
Yeah, that is a good point. Like, it does, now that you've mentioned it, it does basically look almost exactly like the show car, if it isn't indeed the show car with an AlphaTauri skin on it. Yeah, Steve, have you got anything to add on the AlphaTauri that we might have missed?
Well, it's kind of strange. I mean, as mentioned already, this could just be all a smokescreen, or, you know, just teams playing games with each other. This is a render. We've seen, just refresh my memory, the actual AlphaTauri reveal, they did have a physical car there, didn't they? No, they didn't. So this is just a render. So based on what we can see, and I'm also comparing it to this incredibly blurry side-on photo of the actual Red Bullet Silverstone, I think the side pods might be more or less what they're going for. So there's quite a deep undercut immediately below the actual intake for the cooling, and that runs down quite sharply towards the floor. So I think they might be trying to do something similar along the lines to what Aston Martin and Ferrari have done with their floor, but just a less extreme interpretation. If you look at the Aston and the Ferrari, they've both got basically effectively a double floor design. Hopefully it doesn't bite them in the ass like it did with Ferrari in the 90s. But there's quite a distinctive sort of cutout below that intake. And then it sort of does that again along the top of the side pod heading down towards the Coke bottle section. So if that is what they're going for, then they're obviously going the complete opposite direction to some of the other designs we've seen, where they're just wanting to have all the cooling just sort of vent out where the suspension is. And, you know, that's sort of what we've seen over the last few years. The difference is these cars have now all got beam wings, which are returning for this year. So they can use a bit of that sort of potentially lower energy, warmer air to basically stall that rear wing, that beam wing at high speed. However, this is all just speculation. I'm not an aerodynamic engineer, so I don't know. But apart from that, it looks fairly conventional. I wouldn't really read too much into it myself, because I don't think that's going to be anywhere near what that car is actually going to look like once we get to Barcelona, if we're actually allowed to see anything at all.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if we do get to see anything from Barcelona, because it is going to be a closed doors test, I believe the report was. But Louis, let's talk about a car that, you know, we have actually, I want to say seen in the flesh, but we've seen photos of an actual car that has been driven on track and stuff. The Williams FW44. It's very blue. It's very blue. But, you know, like, how do you think this compares to last season's livery, which was divisive in itself, but I think a lot of people ended up liking it by the end of the season?
Yeah, I think with Williams, I think a lot of people just want them to go back to the sort of the blue, white and yellow sort of livery from the 90s. But as you said, yeah, this livery is very blue, a lot more blue than what was last year. And just as I've said sort of in our group chats and also on Twitter, I think Williams are very lucky that Alpine are going to have quite a bit of pink on their car this year. Otherwise, I think it could be quite easy to mistake the two. As for the livery itself, it's not my favourite. It's kind of just there. It is just a livery. And as for the car itself, of course, I'm having to look at pictures that are obviously made it designed to, you know, make it difficult to see what the actual car is looking like, because all of the renders that we've seen and all the sort of up close photos that we've seen have all been renders off the show car and not the actual car. But as for sort of what it looked like on track, it looks all right. I don't know how it's going to perform. Williams, of course, had quite a lot of time to work on this car, because they were given permission by the FIA to develop pretty much Williams who developed the show car to begin with. So they've had a lot of time to work on this. And yeah, it's we'll probably go to Jack to figure out if anything they've done is particularly of interest, but the only thing I really spot is just how high that front wing is, and it's very similar to what Aston Martin have done.
Yeah, the high front wing does certainly stick out. And Jack, as Louis so kindly pointed out, we're probably going to come to you for some things like that, but one thing I've noticed from like an aerial shot, I don't know if it is like from the render or if it's just, you know, a different one, but it does appear to be very tight at the rear as well.
No, you're right. Sort of most of the packaging around the side seems to be a big talking point from when they revealed the car certainly out on track. Talk about the nose section first. I think that's probably our biggest sort of, it's our new high rake, low rake thing, isn't it? High nose or low nose. It's all about treating how the air meets the front of the floor, whether you get the wing quite literally out of the way and get clear flow through it, or try and condition it with mainly what people will be doing with that first plane of the wing. But as you were talking about with the packaging, probably the biggest giveaway that they were trying to be a bit more extreme is kind of the wrong word, but in that sort of sense, is that there's certainly on the car they shook down at Silverstone, you can see a bubble just under the side pod inlet, which would be prefer the side impact protection, the newly revised side impact protection rules. And they've tightened up the bodywork so much around that they need a blister in it to account for it, which is unusual. You don't normally see that sort of thing make it through almost like a blemish, if you like. I think, again, one kind of word. But yeah, it's rare to see that sort of thing. We haven't got a double floor. They've gone a bit like the Racing Point, was it Magello with 2019, I think, where they took the weird sort of sloping side pod where it converged to the floor. Kind of got that sort of style. No real louvers either, so they're really focusing on sending all the hot air from the engine bay through to out under the main plane of the rear wing, through past the beam wing and such. Also, their DRS seems a touch different. They've gone for a slightly different actuator design on their, again, on the car that they shook down. The DRS actuator seems to be in a slightly different position to others, so might be something to look out for. But, I mean, we're going to see a massive development rush over the first half of the season, so it's anybody's guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is going to be interesting to see just how similar the cars are, you know, in Bahrain at race one, to like the things that we've been seeing, you know, of the shakedown cars or of renders, etc. But Steve, in our group chat, you mentioned something about holes in the side pod that you like spotted in the shakedown photos of the Williams. Is there anything that you could, well, have you confirmed for a start if there were holes in the side pods or not, or and what they would be using those for if there are?
From what I'm gathering, that photo is the actual car. And yes, there are holes in the side pod. I don't, again, not an expert on this. This is pure speculation, but I suspect they might be doing something similar to what Red Bull did with the RB09. But instead of using exhaust gases, they're using waste heat from the very tight cooling. So as Jack pointed out, it's incredibly tightly sculpted. I mean, you can see that lower side impact bar sort of just jutting its ass out the side of the car. It's not a particularly elegant solution, but I think what they might be going for is just trying to, sounds a bit strange, but generate quite a bit of heat in that side pod, creating a bit of heat soak, which is then vented out the back of the side pod and down towards the floor. So that's obviously going to basically energize, you know, the floor where it kicks up towards the beam wing. They can do very limited stuff aerodynamically with the sculpting on the rear suspension, and I suspect that the pull rod design they've gone for the rear might be something to do with that as well. Just given the way that suspension element is angled, that will obviously help feed that hot charged air up towards that beam wing as well. So I think we heard rumors, I think late last year, that a couple of teams had clued on to something a bit different. I don't know if it's Williams who I'd factor into that, but they're certainly trying something a wee bit different. My concern is that they're still stuck in this mindset of having quite an airflow critical car. They had that last year. In ideal conditions, it worked very well, but as soon as it got into any sort of, like, you know, slightly off angle airflow or traffic or that sort of thing, it had a tendency to fall over and be quite nervous. And we saw that happen a few times, especially to Nick Latifi, who I think is a bit more used to driving something a bit more planted. George Russell was able to sort of handle that a wee bit more. Obviously, he's not there anymore, so what they make of this new design, I'm very keen to hear from the drivers what they think of this new car. But I mean, besides that, it's fairly conventional. Can't remember who mentioned it before. It was either Louis or Jack. This, you know, the high wing versus low wing thing is really the new rake of 2022. I suspect because of the way that front wing is actually shaped, a lot of the air running inboard is going to be pushed up and out of the way of the side pods. So I think they're probably relying more on airflow below the wing to feed the venturi intakes and so on. But besides that, I mean, we need to see more of the car, but that very blurry photo of the car pulling out of the garage, there are two very distinctive holes in the back of the side pod. And if you have a look at the, I think we've only got two or three photos of the Williams actually on track. I think it's the last photo where it's actually out running on track. If you have a look at the side pod, just behind that element that joins the mirror onto the top of the side pod, if you have a look just past that and down a bit, I think you can actually see one of the holes. I don't know if that's just a reflection or whatever, but there's something going on there. I'm really keen to see side on and the rear angles of that car, because I think they've intentionally not given us anything of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's certainly one of the things that we're getting from a lot of the team car reveals, well, livery reveals for the most part this season, is that no one wants to give away anything because we're going through a whole new era of F1, really. And, you know, you don't want to give your competitors, you know, something to go on. And, but yeah, just one last thing on that Williams. Fortunately, no signs anywhere of British Energy. And considering that that was one of the heavily rumoured things, I think we can all breathe a very nice sigh of relief. But yeah, Louis, let's move on to Ferrari's F175. You know, they've got naming regulations the same as Microsoft's Xbox, these bloody things. But for once, you know, it's a nice simple one, the F175. I think it looks great. And I think a lot of other people do too. And, you know, that nose is certainly something to talk about. Apparently it's modular, but yeah, the Ferrari F175. What do you think?
I mean, talk about it, like, we've been told that teams are, you know, playing the cards close to the chest, and then suddenly Ferrari come out with a design that we haven't, a design that we just completely haven't seen from any of the other teams, whether it is something, of course, that we all see a lot more of from other teams, or just something that they put on their show, their first sort of car. We don't know what it's going to look like come a couple of months. But yeah, the first thing you notice, of course, is that front wing. It's very pointed. It's quite long, actually, the way that they've done it. It's not just, it just doesn't come to a point. It's kind of like a, it slowly comes to a point. And then also you have to look at the side of the car and the big divots and big scoops in the side pods, similar to, I think someone pointed out, that's similar to something that McLaren did back in 2013 on their car. They kind of just like scooped their side pods. I'll have to ask Jack what it does, but certainly from a visual aspect, it looks like Ferrari are, you know, not afraid to really, you know, go out there and show what they've done so far. And considering this is meant to be a season that a lot of people are backing Ferrari to do very well, you know, this is meant to be Ferrari season, and it's very clear from their launch that they have high expectations of what they're going to get out this season. You know, they've got two drivers who last year were incredibly quick when the machinery allowed them to be, and if this Ferrari allows either Leclerc or Sainz to be fast, then you're looking at serious title contenders.
Yeah, absolutely. Ferrari have been talking a very big game in the run-up to the start of this season, especially with their car launch. And Jack, you know, Louis mentioned it a little bit, like, this car is very molded. You know, I've seen memes comparing like the slopes that they've got on the car to, you know, Eau Rouge and stuff. You know, just how, from what you've seen, like, is this a Ferrari embracing aerodynamics as opposed to just going really quickly?
I mean, it's only the fact that it's one of the most visually arresting cars, it just sort of gives the game away a little bit that they are trying something. As mentioned before, they are also going for that double floor design. So if you look at the side profile of the car, you can kind of see that the underside of the side pod, the main red part between the floor ceiling surface and the lower cyber portion, is an aero profile. It's another way of speeding up the air to, again, bring a bit more downforce towards the center of the car. Very unique to this car. So, I mean, we'll see if it works. Given that they have gone so aggressively, I mean, the engine development is frozen. You've got to think that they are going to have been trying new ideas to make up performance elsewhere. Also, they've had to shed a fair load of staff given the budget cap. Most of them have gone to Haas now. So maybe a lighter workforce has actually encouraged a bit more bouncing ideas off of each other within the design team. Maybe it encouraged to get a bit more experimental rather than getting bogged down in larger and larger groups. We'll see if it's a philosophy that has been followed and works for them. The front wing, as mentioned before, is... Now, this is the one thing I have struggled with. I get called the master of engineering. I'm by no means an expert. This modular design, I think the idea is to sort of help with development throughout the season rather than being locked into a philosophy. It gives them a bit of freedom both inboard and outboard. And whilst we see as the season goes on which direction of wing loading proves to be the best, it means that Ferrari wouldn't be stuck in a form of design that then just makes them hemorrhage time throughout the season as other teams pick up the pace. Another thing that I noticed with this car, again on the side profile, is they seem to be the only one that have got conventional looking rear wing end plates. I don't know if that's just a trick of the way it's looking, but a lot of the other teams seem to have that very sculpted down towards the rear diffuser flanks, one sort of shape, no real definition to it, a very smooth flowing form, whereas the side profile of the Ferrari has an almost traditional boxed rear wing end plate with the wing sort of protruding through the top. Quite unusual. I don't know if I'm just noticing on that and being blind to it on other cars. I'd be willing to hear what the rest of you think.
Yeah, sticking on that then, Steve, is that something that you've picked up on as well, just for the Ferrari? And also, as a second question, do you think this Ferrari looks better now that it's lost the tobacco sponsorship? Well, the secret tobacco sponsorship that wasn't really secret.
Yeah, the not tobacco sponsorship. Yeah, that green was disgusting. I'm glad to see it gone. And if Mission Winnow never come back to Formula One again, it'll be too soon. Yeah, the rear wing design that Jack pointed out was something that I was actually looking at. Now that he's pointed it out, it's wildly different to anything we've seen. Like that, if you have a look at the head-on shot of the Williams, I think it's heading down the pits. That's basically like you've got your main wing, like horizontal elements, and then it curves immediately downwards towards the beam wing. But it's basically a consecutive profile. Whereas with the Ferrari, it's a far more realistic looking solution. I think what we're looking at is probably the best representation of what we can actually expect these cars to look like when we get them out on track. I don't think Ferrari are hiding anything. There's a lot going on. I was very amused to hear all the different theories around the NACA duct on the nose. I'm pretty sure that's just to cool the driver or some of the electronics. But yeah, there's future-proofing in this design that I don't think we've seen with any of the other cars. I mean, you've got these, bathtubs basically in the side pods, which is great for the hotter races. You know, if the drivers get hot, they can just have a soak in the bath. But there are ways that, like, if they get a few races down the road and they find that this severe undercut out of the top of the side pod philosophy isn't working, then there's potential for them to change it. But I think they've got quite intentional packaging in there. I wouldn't be surprised if the radiator is basically like sort of sitting up against the outer wall of the side pod at almost 90 degrees to the ground with some clever ducting to feed it. And then it, and then it again vents that hot air out of those louvers to try and energize the rear wing. I mean, one thing that all these teams are going to be trying to do is make the airflow out the back of the car as annoying for the guy behind as possible. And while the FIA have tried everything they can to mitigate that, we know what Formula One teams are like. They will find any trick in the book, as long as it's legal or vague enough to be acceptable, to try and make it as irritating for the car behind as possible to even get close to them, let alone pass. Yeah, besides that, I think it's quite an elegant design. I think this would be my pick visually out of what we've seen so far. But I think it's just the combination of red with black wings that it's more of a nostalgia thing for me than anything else. But yeah, I mean, it's a really tidy design. But the thing that excites me the most about this car is I think it's representative of what we can expect. I don't think they're hiding anything. I'd be very surprised if this car looked massively different once we get to testing or that sort. I mean, we've seen it and its shakedown runs now and it's identical. There's no difference. So from what I could see anyway, so... Yeah, I mean, the speculation around Ferrari going for pull rod front suspension is gone. Obviously, they've got push rod, same as Haas. And I think the Alfa Romeo spy shots that we've seen, it's push rod on the front as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's conventional enough on the surface. But, yeah, I mean, there's some really interesting detail there. The double floor is really neat. I love the side pod idea that they're doing. Definitely the most radical design we've seen so far. I'm really keen on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Louis, let's talk about radical redesigns. The Mercedes W13 is back in silver. The silver arrows are back. You know, for starters, just to lay my hat down, I think this is one beautiful looking car. I mean, I think, to be fair, I think all of the cars like that we've seen in terms of liveries have all actually looked really stunning this season. Well, this pre-season. What do you think of the Mercedes W13?
Yes, I mean, the black has been nice for the last couple of years, but I am glad to see that Mercedes are back in silver. It just looks, not like it feels right, but it just looks so much nicer in the way that they've done it. They have still tried to incorporate it sort of as much black into the car as possible, but it is a very, very nice looking car, and one that Mercedes will be really hoping does well. We've seen multiple different versions of this car already. The one that they released in the renders was completely different to the one that they released in the launch. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the launch car and the one that we've seen in the shakedown runnings at Silverstone have been the same. So I think it's probably best to look at the car that was out on track and to look at the car that was actually in the launch as the one that Mercedes are putting, will be running this season. Not any changes that may happen between now and Bahrain. But from what I've seen of the car out on track in some very questionable conditions, especially in the UK at the moment, yeah, it looks good. And I really reached my knowledge of what's actually going on a Formula One car in terms of aerodynamics and engineering. But it does look good, and the old sort of cliche that we've seen throughout these F1 launches, well, if it goes as quick as it looks, then we're on for a world championship car.
Yeah. Jack, considering that, you know, their 2021 title rivals Red Bull like only showed like a livery reveal on the show car, and we've actually seen, you know, Mercedes sort of show their hand to an extent, are you surprised that, you know, they've very much laid down a gauntlet like this? Or, you know, do you think that this is Mercedes being like, hey, look, this is what we've got, beat this?
I don't know. I mean, there's always, I think a lot of people will have found an idea that they haven't thought of in those cars that have been revealed with any form of realistic design. Bearing in mind that we are so close to testing now, it's not like they're going to be introducing stuff. Actually, big Formula One teams, they may well be taking some ideas and introducing it into testing. Clout is something that they're not sure of, but I wouldn't be surprised if Mercedes, given again that clout of resources, that if they wanted to show an older aero evolution, then they could. So, like front wings, rear wings, they change them pretty much whenever they feel like, and they're the sort of things that capture the attention. Also, you've got to bear in mind a lot of stuff that will have a big impact on the car is stuff that we cannot see because it's under the car or buried deep within the bowels of the suspension, the rear suspension especially. And that's one good thing about testing in Silverstone. That area of the car is very well hidden. With regards to how it compares to the launch car, I think the biggest difference for me is the front end. They definitely went way more aggressive on the, especially the front wing end plates and kind of the loading. You could kind of see where a lot of teams have gone inboard loaded. Mercedes went very much outboard loaded, almost like they were trying to generate old school outwash. I don't know if that would have been like conceptually within the rules, but for whatever reason, the car that they shipped down at Silverstone doesn't feature this. One thing that did carry over, though, is the clearest I've seen it on any non-augmented pictures so far is the flow conditioning into the Venturi tunnels. There's a lot of strakes and turning vanes to guide and funnel the air under the car and to manipulate it into the Venturis as they need it to, more so than I've seen on anything else. Packaging-wise, we've seen some quite aggressive options from the two Mercedes customer teams, McLaren and Aston Martin. Mercedes themselves don't seem to have gone with that down that avenue. Again, not with the car they tested anyway. Whether or not something else is in the pipeline, we don't know. But they're certainly not going as aggressive as Ferrari, as mentioned. Looking at that cut out of the side was almost like the old Coanda exhaust trying to generate a vortex down. But for all we know, bearing in mind they've kept that black, it's going to be good at hiding something. There may be something on the trailing edge of the floor as the Venturi opens up there may be some conditioners there that have been hidden in the photos that would start to influence the way the it's introduced to the rear wing. Be interested to see if Steve has found anything else.
Yes, that was a very extensive shakedown of the Mercedes Formula One. W13, I got there in the end. But Steve, is there anything that like you picked out that Jack didn't mention?
The rear wing's really interesting. It's got this sort of double sort of, I don't know what to call it, double dip sort of design to it. It's far more, I wouldn't call it conservative, but it's just a bit of a, you know, departure from what we've seen so far. And this is what I meant before by teams finding, you know, sort of tricks there. What I think they're trying to do is, because that horizontal plane is quite constant compared to the other cars, I think they're trying to get more airflow to spill over the wing uprights, just to cause a bit of sort of turbulence and dirty air. And this is exactly what I was talking about before with teams finding small tricks. I haven't looked at the regulations because I wouldn't even bother to attempt to understand them, but there may be something in there about the rear wing needing a certain amount of progressive depth to it. And instead of having it on one consecutive sort of, you know, shape, they've managed to interpret that as two separate shapes either side of the center element. So that's quite interesting. This corrugation New Zealand's tin shed roof thing that's going on the side of the floor is interesting as well. And I think that might be, again, a way of having, I suppose, excess air spill out at high speed just to try and stall the rear section of the floor. It might also be to just charge air to run along the upper side of the floor as well, just to try and manage things a wee bit better. The packaging for the actual Venturis, as Jack pointed out before, is really interesting. I think that's the tightest we've seen so far on a car that I think we can expect is the real thing. And that's the other interesting thing as well. I think this might be a bit of a shot across the bow at Red Bull, because they, like Mercedes, could have just shown those renders that we saw as opposed to this car, and you know, we've been none the wiser. But I think this might be a bit of a shot across the bow at them, that they are quietly confident that this car is something special, and I would be inclined to believe them. It looks very, very just tidy. There's nothing really on there that jumps out at me as weird. But then again, these are entirely new regulations. This does make me very scared for Aston Martin now, though. They're the only team using this power unit and cooling arrangement who have gone for something completely different. So they've either clued onto something, or they've done what they did last year and sort of shot themselves in the foot a bit. So it'll be interesting to see if they attempt to fix that or just blame the regulations as per last year. Overall, really, really tidy. The thing that I was panicking about initially was I couldn't see Niki Lauda's red star on there, but it is there. It's just behind the driver's head below the Ineos logo. So Niki Lauda does indeed drive with them. The only thing I'm sad about is the absence of black livery. I think that was quite an important message. And for a year where F1 seems to be, dare I say, giving up on the drive for equality, even though I don't think they really attempted much in substance in the first place, I think that's quite a shame. I would have loved to have seen some sort of nod or throwback to that black livery, but social movements aside, I think it's a very, very, you know, smart looking car. The other thing I really like about it visually is the red underneath the rear wing as well, how it sort of follows the entire intersection of that rear wing. That looks really cool. But I want to see lower than that. I want to see these diffusers, because we haven't seen anything representative so far. And I think that's where the real differences are going to be.
Yeah, I get the feeling when Bahrain comes around and cars are sat on the grid, we're going to see a lot of people hired specifically to stand behind the car on the grid, you know, covering the backs of cars and all of that. But yeah, that is the four cars that we've had officially launched this week. There was some spy shots of the Alfa Romeo that people have seen. I'm just going to put this out to anyone that can actually say anything, if there is anything that anyone's got to say about the camo shots that we saw of the car. Anyone have anything to say about it?
The only thing I can really say at the moment is that, like, it's good that they put all their sponsors on there, because at the moment you can't see Rich Energy, so it means that we may not be in with a shock.
Please,
to see that Alfa Romeo.
We've still got Alpine, don't jinx it.
Yeah, they just signed BWT, like BWT, so I'd expect that to still be their main
BWT, sponsor. Rich Energy, Alpine.
The picture that they put online, of course, that Rich Energy put online, was that the car would be black and gold. But honestly, I think they're taking the piss slightly.
There are, I'm just having a look at the car again now. The thing I like about Alpha is the fact that they sort of give way to typical convention and always try something a little bit extreme, especially with their front wing. And they've done that this year, if this is the car that they intend to run or at least test with. So it's got the sort of floating or hanging main plane just to try and feed air to the underfloor. And, I think there will obviously be a limited amount of flex that they're expecting with that wing as well to help them out as well. But it looks quite, I don't know how to word this, bulky? It might be the camouflage, but it just looks a little bit cumbersome, especially around the side pod area. There's a very definitive but less extreme interpretation of this double floor design that Aston Martin and Ferrari are doing. But I don't know if it's just, it's probably just the camo, and it's obviously doing its job, because at the moment it looks quite strange, and that Coke bottle section ends very prematurely to what we're used to seeing. It's a lot shorter. It looks like it ends sort of halfway down the gearbox casing. So I don't know if they've left it off to see what sort of airflow changes they get over the rear suspension and the beam wing. But besides that, it looks very, very similar to what we've seen so far. I mean, the changes are going to be more, besides the side pods, which are all vastly different from each other, if you're looking across the entire range, the differences are far more difficult to pick out unless you're really, really looking. But yeah, it's a weird looking car. They've done their split airbox arrangement again as well. So I think it might be a continued attempt to try and take that mass off the roll structure. Whether that works out or not, I don't know. But I think last year's car, one side was to feed the turbocharger and the other side was additional cooling for the batteries. So I imagine they've gone for that setup again. But it's a strange looking car. I'm keen to see it in its livery, because at the moment I don't think it's a particularly good looking car.
Yeah, that's always something you get with the camos, with the exception of, I think it was Red Bull's, maybe it was their 2015 car, the camo on one of their like pre-season cars was like very good. And you know, it would be nice to see Red Bull in a different sort of livery, but I know that's never going to happen whilst they are now branded with Red Bull. But Jack, did you have anything to add just whilst we're, you know, still talking about the Alfa Romeo?
No, I think Steve's pretty much plucked everything from the picture. Yeah, those side pods are certainly the most distinctive part about it. Whether or not that's a good or bad thing is yet to be seen. Otherwise, yeah, no, honestly, not much more I could add, to be honest.
Yeah, that's perfectly valid. So yeah, just of the cars that we've had revealed so far, then just want to get people's favorite liveries, you know, maybe a top three, because, you know, we've all mentioned the ones that we do really like. You know, I really like the Mercedes. The McLaren is a very close, like maybe second or third, depending on how I feel on the day about the Ferrari, which is also in that top three. You know, it's just what I imagine, but Louis, your top three liveries so far, please.
My opinion hasn't really changed since last week on the McLaren. I really do like it. And it is just, for me, it's just a really nice car. And even though it comes from a place of heavy bias, I can't say that I don't like it, because I really do. So I think number one would be McLaren. I think number two would be Ferrari. I just love that they've gone for a bit of a darker red and they've sort of blended that with the black. It looks very nice. And then number three, I would go with Aston Martin.
Ooh, some good choices there. Steve, your top three liveries so far, please.
Can I pick Ferrari three times?
If you were the Ferrari Association, perhaps.
No, for me, it's the Ferrari and like miles ahead in first. I think second, Williams, actually, purely because that dark blue reminds me of the old Simtek livery. And then third, I don't know. It's hard to pick between Mercedes and Aston Martin. I think I like the Aston just because they've gotten rid of that god-awful pink. It just didn't work. That green was far too dull. They've obviously, you know, just smartened it up for this year. So I think as a point of difference in the fact they've actually put some effort into the livery this year, I'd go with the Aston for third.
Yeah, perfectly valid reasons. Jack, your three, please.
think my top one's got to be the Ferrari. The more and more pictures I see of that car, it's just it keeps getting better, which I couldn't say about a lot of Ferraris recently. The second, and quite close actually, would be Aston Martin for me. I love that they've gone back to that GT style, especially with the lime yellow green highlights. It's very GT1 era livery, and I'm all for that. Third, I want it to be Mercedes, but I want it to be the rendered Mercedes, because I think that looks miles better from the shots they released than the one they tested. I think even then it'd be Mercedes, but closely followed by McLaren in fourth. I don't like what they've done with that livery. And I'm presuming the blue on the McLaren is for golf, and golf liveries normally look amazing, and that one's just not doing it for me.
The face that Louis is giving Jack right now for the people who are listening as opposed to watching on YouTube, priceless. Go back to the YouTube video and watch it. Oh, man. But yeah, now we usually give an opportunity to the guests to give a bit of a promo. So Louis, let's start with you. You know, where can people, you know, find you online if that is what they wish to do?
Yeah, God forbid they want to find me. You can follow me on Twitter, which is at L_G_Edwards. If you really want to know what my opinions on some various things in the world, you can follow me on that. Otherwise, I do write some articles for Spotlight Pro, some F1, just covering the F1 weekend, sometimes doing my own opinion pieces. So yeah, go check them out.
Yeah. Do go and check them out. And Steve, on to you. Formula Shakedown, you know, people, where can people find it? What is it? Et cetera, et cetera.
We are on Facebook, and basically there's a consortium of different Shakedown groups. So there's stuff for GT and MotoGP and that sort of thing as well. But they're all built along the same MO of just basically being a non-toxic, constructive, you know, positive association and that sort of thing. So obviously there's a lot of groups out there which just attract all sorts of unpleasantness, so we're trying to get away from that. So got loads of members, around 4,000 or so on the Formula Shakedown thing. I really should know as a moderator, but I don't off the top of my head. But no, you can find us on Facebook. Feel free to send a join request, tell them I sent you, and if you don't, that's fine. But yeah, like, come and find us.
Yeah, F1 certainly does need its non-toxic locations at the minute, especially over the last couple of years. Just anywhere online has been horrible to be in for the most part. Not naming any subreddits or social media platforms. But Jack, what about you? I believe you also write for Spotlight Pro.
Yes, I believe the owners of Spotlight would wish I did a bit more often. If you want to follow me, again, if you really, really want that, you can probably best find me on Twitter at J_C_Watson. I didn't just read it off my phone, I promise. Yeah, probably the most active I'll be. I'll occasionally be on the podcast, obviously. Otherwise, I will write more techie/historical focused articles on Spotlight. At the minute, I'm due finishing up a series on some of the biggest innovations in F1. So when I do finally get around to finishing that, sorry, George, you can find me on there.
Cool. And if anyone fancies following me, for most platforms, it's at Rubes, one R, two U's, a B and a Z, B-E-Z. And I'm mostly just doing this at the minute because everything else is on hold, but if you fancy following me, that's entirely up to you. I hate social media. Anyway, Grid Talk is now available on Amazon, as well as YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Casts. Just search F1 Grid Talk. There's a huge back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and the race results, and even shows like this where, you know, we talk about cars from a visual perspective for a non-visual medium. We are on Reddit, search for the subreddit F1 Grid Talk, and we also have a Patreon for mics, lights, and better recording equipment. You can get your hands on some official Grid Talk merchandise on f1chronicle.com/store. Also, make sure you subscribe to be the first to know when each new episode is released. We'll be back soon with plenty of more F1 content, but thank you very much for joining me, guys.
No worries.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Yeah, and thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.